There was a station, if a single siding counted as a station. The track continued north, but the height of the weeds, trees, and bracken suggested that a train hadn't passed that way in years. Valentine even checked the rust on the rails to be sure. In his days as a wolf, he'd seen supply caves hidden by saplings and bushes specifically pulled up and replanted to discourage investigation. Deep oxidation. He could scrape it off with a thumbnail.
Fool's hope. Rooster either lied or didn't have the correct information from the Kurians. Maybe they divert the trains to keep the final destination secret.
Price unloaded his mule to give the animal a breather.
The debt is settled. I feel for you, David. Long way to come to find nothing. It's happened to me.
Post would know Valentine tried his best. How many vanished every year in the Kurian zone? 100,000? 500,000? But how do you laugh in a legless man's face and tell him the last rope he's clinging to isn't tied to anything but a wish? The narrow road bordering the track was in pretty poor condition. It certainly wasn't frequently traveled. Why here? Price filled the mule's nose bag, and Bee rooted inside one of the abandoned houses for firewood. Duvalier stretched herself out next to a ditch and took off her boots. The hills around Laurelton were close. 100 men, properly posted, could make sure that whatever transpired here couldn't be seen by anything but aircraft or satellites. Anka poked around the road, examining potholes.
Strange sort of road, my David.
Valentine joined him. Like the tracks, it ended in weeds to the north. The south part had been patched. Valentine trotted a few hundred yards south. There was a filled gap in the road at a washout, recent enough for the asphalt to still be black-bluish rather than gray-green. The Kurians weren't much on infrastructure maintenance, even in their best-run principalities. They didn't like anything that traveled faster than a reaper could run. Valentine examined the weeds and bracken bordering the station. Sure enough, there were 3 gaps, definite paths leading from the tracks to the road. Quick-growing grasses had sprung up, but no brambles or saplings, though they were thick on the west side of the tracks. Price revealed a sausage wrapped in wax paper and a loaf of bread.
A farewell feast, unless you want to come back with us.
Valentine handed him Everready's reaper teeth.
More than earned. If I had another set, I'd give them to you with my initials written on them.
If you see the old squatter again, let him know I appreciate being able to repay the debt. What are you going to do next?
You said you'd brought in men to the ordnance?
Price consulted a scuffed leather notebook and extracted a card from a pocket.
Yep. I'm 314-58 here in Ohio.
He passed it to Valentine. The card had the number and some kind of seal featuring a man in a toga holding one hand over his heart and the other outstretched over a pyramid with an eye at the top.
Meaning what?
Don't know. They always recorded my number when I brought a man in, though.
How hard is it to get one of those?
I didn't even know I had to have one. They gave it to me when I brought my first man in. I was going to stop at one of the cop stations and look at what kind of warrants are out. Long as I'm up this way, maybe someone's hiding out in Kentucky I can bring in. Make the trip profitable in more than a spiritual sense.
Mind if I tag along?
Not at all.
Let's walk along the road on the way back to the river.
After Price flagged down a patrolman on the Riverside Highway, they stopped in the little Ohio side town of Caspian. An ordnance station, part police house, part customs post, and part post office, had the latest warrant flyers posted in a 3-ring binder. Valentine and Price went inside, while the rest visited a market to buy food. They passed an Ohioan with a package on their way to the postal clerk.
Ugh, look what the river washed up.
Price helped Valentine select a handbill. Valentine wanted a female, 30-ish.
Not much to choose from. Guess Ohio women are law-abiding. Except for Gina Stoddard here.
Stealing power and unauthorized wiring. A desperado electrician.
She's all there is.
And what do I do next?
Follow me.
Price took 3 handbills of his own. The top man had killed a woman while trying to perform an illegal abortion and went over to a blue-uniformed officer behind a thick window. She blinked at them from behind thick corrective glasses. Price slid the handbills under the glass, along with his warrant card.
Copies of these, please, and...
Give me a moment!
She went to a cabinet. She got a key and disappeared into another room. 10 minutes later, perhaps she'd worked in a coffee break, she returned with the copies. They were poor quality photocopies, but still readable.
$6.
My associate needs a bounty card.
That makes it $16. You know, you could have said so. I have to make another trip to get one.
I'm sorry.
15 minutes later, she returned with the form. It had a numbered card on it, similar to prices. Valentine filled it out using his Ohio ration card name, Tarkeen Ayub. Not a name Valentine would have chosen on his own. It came off his tongue like a horse getting wire-tripped, and passed it back under the partition. She counted the money, stamped both the document and the bounty card, then took out a scissors and cut the card free.
What's the number for?
If you got a prisoner in tow, you can get free food and lodging at any NUC door. They just need the number. Counts as good works for the ordnance lottery. Bring in a man or even a useful report and your number goes in that week. You can buy tickets too. This week's pot is $500,000. Care to enter?
I doubt we'll be in the ordnance long enough to collect. Thank you, officer.
They left the station and reunited with Duvalier and the Grogs at the riverbank, sharing a final meal. Price pulled up the mule's feet and inspected them one by one as B held the animal.
This really is goodbye.
Watch your curfew around here, son. Folks button up really tight. If you're solid silver lucky, the police pick you up and throw you in the clink for breaking it.
I'm gonna be poking around in Lexington for a bit. Ohio fugitives head there more often than not. There's jobs at the processing plants, and the West Kentucky Legion isn't too choosy about who it takes on. I'll check in at the depots.
Can I come back with you that far?
You want to give up?
This led nowhere, David. I don't want to stumble around ground I don't know. I feel like we stick out here. Everyone talks different, wears different clothes.
Give me 3 more days.
How far away will you be in 3 days?
No, I could dawdle along the river here for a bit. I never got my vacation in at the shack. I owe myself some fishing.
3 days worth?
3 days.
Lots of people here on bicycles. Price, where do you suppose we can rent some?
Price treated himself to a motel room. He found one with a distinctly non-discriminating owner when it came to personal hygiene, grogs, mules littering the weed-covered parking lot, and where the occupants poured their night soil. It turned out you couldn't rent bicycles, and no money could buy a bike capable of supporting Anka. By parting with yet another gold coin to a bike and moped dealer under a canopy of festive plastic bunting, Valentine and Duvalier each got bicycles with tires, functioning brakes, storage baskets, even clip-on flashlight headlamps that charged by pedaling. After some exploring with Anka, they found a house deep in the woods, not quite a cabin and not quite a shack. While it rested at a tilt, thanks to the absence of a foundation, there was a functioning well, and Anka got water flowing into the house again with a little tinkering and a lot of root cutting. The weather turned fair again, and Valentine and Duvalier bicycled together, almost unarmed. He brought the .22 pistol, she her sword-carrying stick, starting at the nearest crossroads to the end of the line station and working their way outward, following roads heavy enough to support trucks. Valentine kept turning them to the north and east, into hillier and more isolated country. He couldn't say what drove him into this particular notch of Ohio. Perhaps it was a line of 3 legworms patrolling a ridge, glimpsed as they crept through the trees at a distance. Or it was the one true military convoy that passed them coming out of it. 3 tractor trailers, with grog troops and supporting vehicles, and venerable 5-ton cargo trucks. They were only questioned once, by a pair of policemen also on bicycles. Valentine showed his card and the warrant for the renegade electrician, explaining that he'd learned she had a cousin who lived out in these woods.
Don't think so, Ayub. Even during deer season, most around here know to avoid the point country. You're better off searching the other side of the river.
So, on their 3rd day, they risked a pre-dawn ride along the river road to get into the hills early. Other than the good condition of the roads in the region, Valentine couldn't point to anything but a feeling.
Another feeling. Is it because you can't go back? Is that why you won't let this go? You need something to do? Even a ghost chase?
You've been good company. After today, you can go find the Life Weavers. Be sure to tell them about this.
Glad to, Val.
After a few hours, they breakfasted on bread and cheese. A green-painted military truck turned off from the river road and approached their position. Black smoke belched from its stack as the truck shifted up.
Wish we could find out where that's going.
Can do. Watch my coat.
Allie!
Picking up her bicycle, she pedaled madly in the same direction as the truck and brought her bike alongside. She reached out and grabbed a tie for the cargo bed's canvas cover. Valentine watched her disappear. He had little to do over the next 3 hours but refill their water bottles and worry. When she came coasting down the hill again, she had a huge smile.
I've got a date for tonight. Nice guy from New Philadelphia. Lance Corporal Scott Thatcher. He plays the guitar.
Thought you were leaving tonight.
Don't you want to know what I found?
You found something?
It's big, it's well guarded, and Thatcher didn't offer to take me to lunch inside, even with a lot of hints. Want to see?
Valentine picked up his bike as Duvalier shoved her coat into the basket on the back of her bike. They pushed up the hill.
What is it?
I'm not sure. It looks kind of like a hospital. There were ambulances out front, military and civilian. Big grounds, double fenced.
They topped a hill. Another loomed on the other side of a narrow gully. The road took a hairpin turn at a small stream.
I don't suppose your Corporal Thatcher illuminated you.
He said he was just a delivery boy.
A truck blatted through the trees. They pulled their bikes off the road and watched it negotiate the gully. It was an open-backed truck, filled with an assortment of uniformed men, some in bandages, some just weary-looking. They remounted their bikes.
Okay, it is a hospital. Why all the security, then?
They finally saw it from the top of the next hill.
This is probably as far as we should go. There's a watch post at the end of the trees.
Valentine couldn't see much through the trees, just a few salmon-colored building tops, at least a dozen stories tall. The ground leveled out past the hill, flat ground and a straight road to a guarded gate beyond a half mile or so of open ground. Valentine looked through his many binoculars. Yes, there was a little watch station, about the size of a lifeguard's house at a beach, near the break in the trees.
Three layers of fencing with a road between. Outer layer is electrified. Innermost layer is just a polite 6 feet of glorified chicken wire. He dropped me off at the gate. The gatehouse looks normal enough, but 10 yards out to either side, there's tenting over something. I'm guessing heavy weapons.
Valentine did some mental math. This place was perhaps 20 minutes from the train tracks, in trucks driving 40 miles an hour.
Oh, Thatcher gave it a name.
He did?
He called it Xanadu.
Xanadu?
Yeah, mean anything to you?
I've heard the word. I don't know what it means. Fairyland or some such. You hanging around for your date?
I'm meeting him in Ironton.
Anka and I will check this out. Tonight.
They said goodbye to Price while Duvalier biked off to keep her appointment. Valentine decided he could trust Price with a message to Southern Command. Someone needed to know about Xanadu, if Price was willing to act as a courier. Valentine insisted on a farewell drink. Their supply of bulletproof had been much reduced in trading, but they still had a few stoppered bottles. They drank it inside the filthy motel room, windows and doors wide open to admit a little air.
Price, you ever run into any gorillas?
I avoid them if I can. I've had my guns commandeered off me. They've threatened to shoot B, too.
If you could get a message through to the resistance, you'd really help the cause.
The cause? Not that shit again.
It's the only...
No! You don't tell me about the cause, boy. I know your cause. I know Evereddy's cause.
How'd you come to know Evereddy? What happened with those teeth?
Don't suppose you ever heard of a place called Coon County?
No.
Won't find it on your old maps. Nice little spot up in the mountains near Chattanooga, north of Mount Eagle. Called it Coon County because of Tom Coon, roughest son of a bitch you ever met. I'll bet he killed near as many reapers as Evereddy. Old Evereddy was our liaison officer with Southern Command. Got radio gear and explosives through him. We had a bad scrape and lost 26 men, captive. Colonel Coon, he had some quisling prisoners of his own. We kept him around, pulling plows or cutting wood, that kind of stuff. He went in alone to negotiate. We figured they hung him, since he vanished for a month. But wouldn't you know, he came back with 24. Said two had been killed before he could get there, and he exchanged the survivors for 24 of our prisoners. A few weeks later, this big operation got underway.
Rattlesnake, I think it was called. Lots of gorillas involved. I missed it because I had Lyme disease. Tick bite. Put me on antibiotics and finally got a transfusion from old Everready. Then Colonel Coon came back. He looked tired, but he took the time. Coon sat by each bed in the hospital, told a few jokes. He asked me how my wife was doing, if the baby had come. He had that kind of memory. Then the Reaper showed up. It wasn't any kind of a fight, any more than pigs in the slaughter pen put up a fight. Doc Swenson tried to get to a gun. He went down first. A nurse ran. I remember Coon wounded her in the leg, kneecapped her. The Reaper took a friend of mine, Grouse, we called him. The woman next to me blew air into her IV and died rather than have the Reaper take her. I just froze up. I couldn't move a muscle, not even my eyes, hardly. It killed the nurse right at the bottom of my bed. It fed, and Coon started staggering around. He was speaking so fast. You ever hear someone speaking in tongues, David? Words coming out as fast as voltage. The Reaper started dancing, doing this sort of waltz with the nurse's body as it jumped from bed to bed. Some of her blood and piss got on me as it swung around. That's when Everetti came in. He gave it a face full of buckshot and stuck a surgical knife in its ear. Then he drowned Coon in the slop bucket where they emptied the bedpans. He picked me up like I was a 6-year-old girl and ran. Well, there were Reapers everywhere. Coon had let them right in. They got everyone in Coon County. Even my wife. Everetti told me about how he'd heard from the Life Weaver what a seductive thing it was to feed on another man's spirit like that. He said humans could do it same as the others with the right training, kind of like what the Life Weavers do to men like Everetti. I thought they got to Colonel Coon when he went to bargain about those 26 men, but Everetti said it was probably even before that. I felt dirty living when Nat... Everyone else died.
What's Coon County like now?
Just another Kurian zone, David. I gave up the war then. How are we supposed to win when they can grant a man immortality for joining in? The Kurian zone ain't so bad. The Reapers feed behind closed doors. It's like it's not even happening. A person gone now and then, like they walked off into the country and never came back. Even the end's not so bad, they tell me. The Reapers, they look into your eyes, and you see pretty meadows full of flowers and sunlight, or everyone you know who's dead welcoming you, urging you on like you don't even feel the tongue going in. That doesn't sound so bad. A good Christian doesn't fear death.
He doesn't hasten it either.
Young and idealistic. You want to talk hastening death? You've been in battles. Who's got the better deal? The man in the Kurian zone has plenty of food on the table, leisure time to spend, a family if he wants, children, even grandchildren if he keeps his nose clean. Compare that to you boys in the Ozarks. Get drafted, what, 16 is it now? Break your back in labor units until a rifle becomes available, and then you're dead by 20. How many virgins you buried, David? What kind of life did they have? Only people I'm setting myself against are those that want to make other people's tiny slice of life a misery. Murderers, rapists, child touchers, swindlers. That's my cause.
You're forgetting the biggest murderers of all.
You say? I say all they're doing is making it sensible and orderly. You get an orderly birth, an orderly life, an orderly death. I've come across dozens of folks running from the Kurians, or at least they started out that way. 2-3 days later, they're hungry and cold, and they ask me to lead them to food and shelter. Thank me for putting them back in the order, even if it's an NUC way station with a Reaper in the belfry. They want the order.
You keep telling yourself that, Price, if it makes you feel better. Wish I'd known the man Everetti saved.
You missed him. I don't. Let's talk again in 10 years and see if you're still so sure of your cause.
Valentine rode his bicycle, and Ankar loped along, his gear tied to Valentine's handlebar and on the back of his bike. A distant whistle sounded curfew as the sun disappeared. And Valentine walked the bike off the road. They slept for 3 hours, long enough to give their bodies a break, then moved through the hills more cautiously. Valentine kept his life sign down and hoped that his old ability to feel the cold presence of a prowling reaper hadn't been dulled by disuse. Sure enough, there was one in the gully with the hairpin turn on the road, keeping watch. They put earth and trees between themselves and the reaper, threw a wide loop around, and Valentine sensed another one, a dark star on his mental horizon. It reminded him of the installation he'd come across with Gonzo in Wisconsin before their disastrous encounter with a sniper. He and Anka backed off, put another half mile of woods and wildlife between themselves and the sentry reaper.
I might be able to get through them alone, old horse. You don't make human life sign, but you make enough for them to get curious.
I could go first. When it comes to investigate, you...
No. A reaper goes missing and they'll know someone's poking around. Go back to the house. Keep the thick cover and wait for me. Or Duvalier.
What will you do?
I'm gonna get past the reaper sentries and keep down until the day watch comes, if any. If I'm lucky, I'll be inside the sentry line and outside the wire, and I can get a real look at the place by daylight. At dusk, I'll creep out again.
If you're not lucky?
You and Allie get back to Southern Command. Hopefully they'll try again with a better prepared team.
I remember having this conversation before. We only just found you. Would it not be better to look around from inside the wire, my David?
Of course. How do we do that?
It is a hospital. One of us just has to be sick enough.
I know a couple of old tricks. One or two can even fool a doctor. Well, let's get back to Allie first. This blows up in our faces. I have a feeling we'll never get outside that wire again.
Valentine, Anka, and Duvalier stood at the crossroads. The river road stretched off east and west, the road leading to the well-guarded hospital branching off. She didn't discuss her date the previous night, save to deny that she got anything of use out of the soldier.
He's going on a long patrol. He offered to see me again in 4 days.
You gonna wait for him?
Depends if you and the jolly gold giant here go through with this insanity.
It will work.
Price left us a bass boat. I've still got our spam. How much action do you want?
Just a little fire or two on the other side of the river. Tonight, nothing too hard.
And your illness?
A little ipecac and other herbs with unfortunate pharmacological side effects.
Will that be convincing enough? I think I see your dinner, Alessa. My David, may I see your pistol?
Valentine handed over the gun. Anka checked it over, then pointed it at his neck.
Anka!
Valentine and Duvalier stood dumbfounded. Blood and flesh flew from the Golden One's neck. He lowered the gun to his elbow and shot himself through the arm, then again at the hip point. Valentine tried to wrestle the gun from Anka's grip, burning his hand on the barrel, but the grog was too strong. It fired again. Then Anka released the gun. Valentine put the gun back on safety and began digging for his first aid kit.
What the hell, man?
No need for insults. I just decided...
You wounded yourself to get into the hospital?
Why not just shoot yourself once?
One bullet wound with powder grains around it might be self-inflicted. How many desperate cowards avoid combat by shooting themselves 4 times? But I fear the last penetrated my intestines.
I'm sorry, I thought you'd gone mad.
I knew what I was doing. Pass me that disinfectant.
You should get going. If you pass some of our local constables, have them send an ambulance.
Duvalier gathered up her stick and pack and wheeled her bicycle over to Anka. She kissed him on the ear.
You taste like a muskrat. Don't let him leave you. I'll hang around at Price's motel. They made him pay for a month because of the grog. If you make it back out, you can find me there. Unless, of course, I get the feeling I'm being watched. Then I am gone.
Valentine applied dressings, then sat Anka in the saddle of the bike. The tires immediately flattened, but it served as a convincing conveyance for a wounded grog, with one long arm draped around Valentine's shoulder.
How you doing, old horse?
The wounds burn.
They'll get you patched up. Hope that supply truck passes soon.
I can walk all the way there, if I must.
No supply truck came, but a white ambulance snapped deadfall twigs as it roared through the riverside hills. It didn't employ a siren, but there was no traffic to hurry out of the way. Valentine sat on Ka on the weed-grown shoulder and stood in the roadway, waving his arms. The ambulance, tilted due to a bad suspension, came on, unheeding, lights flashing, then swerved and braked, stalling the motor. The driver spoke through the wire grid that served as his window.
You almost got yourself killed, Quirk.
We're trying to get to the hospital. My friend's wounded.
A grog? Try the...
I'm hurting too. Can we...
On a call, sir. We'll radio back and have you picked up.
He nodded at his associate, who touched a box on the dashboard.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Don't move. Another ambulance will be along.
The driver got the engine going and moved off. Valentine took out his pocket knife.
Curbside service.
My David, what are you going to do?
We're both going in wounded.
Valentine raked the knife twice across the outer side of his left hand. He'd been anticipating the pain, which made it all the worse.
Ah! Defensive wounds.
I hope we have no need for a real dressing. This is our last one.
Just give me some surgical tape and a scissors. I'll close them with butterfly dressings. Those two in the ambulance might have noticed that I didn't have a big dressing on my hand.
I will cut the tape. You're bleeding.
Valentine spattered a little of his own blood on his face to add to the effect. Anka deftly cut notches into each side of the surgical tape and handed the pieces to Valentine one at a time. A butterfly bandage used a minimal amount of tape directly over the wound, gripping the two sides of skin with its wings. Valentine splashed on stinging disinfectant, then used three bandages on one cut, two on the other. It took 20 minutes for the second ambulance to arrive, a gateless pickup truck painted white. The driver was a single older man with a ring of flesh adding a punch to his chin.
You two are the walking wounded, I bet.
That's us.
Hop in the back. There's a water jug there. Don't be afraid to use it. Bring your bike if you want.
A yellow plastic cooler with a cup tied to a string was stuck in one corner of the pickup with a bungee cord. Valentine put the bike in, then he and Anka climbed into the bed. The truck sagged.
Whew! He's a big boy, your grog. Now hold on. I'm gonna drive gentle, but I don't want to lose you when I turn.
The driver executed a neat three-point turn. Valentine spoke to him through the open back window of the pickup.
I'm Tar Ayub. What's your name, sir?
Baraline, grog boy. I've never seen his type before. He's some special breed?
Well, they got him up in Canada. They're good in the snow. Big feet.
Oh, Sasquatches is what he is, huh? What do you know?
I'm told this is the best hospital south of Columbus. Hope they're right. My friend's got a bullet in him.
We'll patch him up. Don't worry.
The pickup negotiated the hairpin turn, climbed out of the gully in second gear, then came out of the trees, and Valentine finally saw Xanadu. It filled all the flat ground in a punch bowl ring of wooded hills. Most of the structures were salmon-colored brick or concrete, save for some wooden outbuildings. Duvalier was right. A triple line of fencing, one polite, two lethal, surrounded the campus-like huddle of structures. Guards at the gate made notations on a clipboard and handed Valentine and Anka stickers with red crosses on them. In the farther corners of the expanse of grass between buildings and fence, Valentine saw dairy cows. There looked to be a baseball diamond and a track closer to the gate. The four biggest salmon-colored buildings looked like apartments Valentine had seen in Chicago, except those had been built with balconies and large windows. Each one was as long as a city block, rectangular, and laid out so they formed a square. Valentine counted 12 stories. A long, low three-story building of a darker brick extended from the four and was joined to a concrete jumble, tiered like a wedding cake, that had ambulances and trucks parked in front of it. The ambulance didn't stop in front of the hospital. It continued to drive around back, past what looked like three-story apartments.
Hey, what about the emergency room?
Your grog goes out to the stables. Don't worry, our vet's treated grogs before.
The pickup drove to a pair of barns, giant old-fashioned wooden ones with an aluminum feed silo between. The truck pulled up to a ranch house with a satellite dish turned into a decorative planter. Valentine saw another, distant barn. Fields with a group of Holsteins and a group of Jerseys were spread out to the wire. A guard tower, hard to distinguish against the treetops, could just be seen. Xanadu's footprint covered several square miles, perhaps the size of downtown Dallas. If it was a concentration camp of some kind, it was a pleasant-looking one. A blonde woman in a white medical coat, a stethoscope around her neck, came out on the porch of the ranch house and walked to the back of the truck. A man in overalls followed her out, holding what looked like a set of shackles.
This is Doc Booth, Tar.
Doc Booth had one of those faces that hung from a broad forehead, progressing down from wide eyes to a modest nose to a tiny dimpled chin.
How cooperative is he?
Extremely.
Oh!
Unless you try to put manacles on me.
A patient who can talk? You're a DVM's dream. What's your name?
Ankha.
I'm Tar. We're out of Kentucky. Bulletproof tribe.
And another Kentucky quirt shows up looking for ordnance medical attention. They need to patrol the river better.
Leave your guns in the truck for now. We've got a safe inside. Anki, come in the operating room.
Booth led them in past kennels filled with German shepherds and pointers. She unlocked and opened a gray metal door. The tiles inside smelled of disinfectant. Dr. Booth checked to see that they were following, then turned on a light in a big white-tiled room. A heavy stainless steel berth, like an autopsy table, dominated the center of the room.
It's not right to treat him in a vet office.
I've got experience tranquilizing large animals, and I'm comfortable around him. I know you're worried, but he's in better hands here than in the main building. They slap bandages on and send everyone to the sanitarium in Columbus. Okay, Anki, on the table. Do you want to lie down? Make it easier for me to reach. You ever had a reaction to pain medication?
I've only had laudanum.
This is better. Takes the edge off.
She opened a cabinet, took out a box of pills, shook three out, and poured him a cup of water.
Pepsi! Gunshot tray.
Ankha swallowed the pills. A plump woman in blue cotton brought in a tray full of instruments. Valentine recognized a probe and some small forceps. The doctor removed Ankha's dressings.
Pepsa, take a look at the legworm rider. He's got some cuts on his hand. Unless you object to being treated by a vet assistant.
I'd rather stay with my tribe mate.
Pepsa gestured into a corner, and Valentine took a seat. She took up Valentine's hand and looked at the self-inflicted wounds, then got a bottle and some cotton balls. Booth cleaned the wound on Ankha's neck.
Does that hurt?
I'm not worried about that one.
We'll get to your stomach in a moment. Neck wounds always worry me. Must have been some brawl. You've got some graining.
We walked into the wrong room.
It happened in Kentucky?
Yeah, a few hours ago.
Uh-huh. I can still smell the gunpowder on you, Bulletproof. You two didn't get drunk and get in a fight or anything?
Pepsa professionally dressed Valentine's wound without saying a word. By the time she was done, the doctor had a light down close to Ankha's stomach, injecting him just above the wound.
You've got a lot of muscle in the midsection, my friend.
Dr. Booth probed a little farther.
Uh-huh. I think we can forget about peritonitis. I don't want to dig around without an x-ray.
Is Pepsa a nickname?
The nurse nodded.
Pepsa's mute, Tar. You down there, girl? Okay, get him the forms. Put down whatever bullshit you want, Bulletproof. Then we'll talk.
Valentine liked the doctor. Her careful handling of Ankha impressed him. That, and the fact that apparently she gave a mute a valuable job in a land where disabilities usually meant a trip to the Reapers. Pepsa led Valentine to a lunchroom. A quarter pot of coffee, real coffee according to Valentine's nose, steamed on a counter in a brewer. Above the counter, a placard read, "Fall Blood Drive, they bleed for you, now you can bleed for them. Leader donors are entered in a drawing for an all-expense-paid trip to Niagara Falls." Valentine filled out the forms, leaving most of the blocks empty, like the 11-digit ordnance security ID, which occupied a bigger area on the form than name. The vet dropped in and sat down, rubbing her eyes.
Ugh. Kevin last night, now you're grog. He'll be fine, but I will have to operate.
Will it be a hard operation?
Toughest part will be opening up those layers of muscles. But no. Kentucky, since you're not ordnance, you'll have to pay for these services, cheap though they are. What do you have on you?
Not much.
I know there's a lot of rumors about this place, that it's some kind of Babylon for high ordnance officials, or that strings of happy pills get passed out like Mardi Gras beads. I've heard the stories. I'm not saying you two jokers tried to get in here by doing something as stupid as putting some small caliber bullets in each other. But Xanadu's no place you want to be. What it is, in fact, is a hospital for treating cases with dangerous infectious conditions. Anti-Kurian terrorists get in their heads to try a few designer diseases lethal to the Guardians, and there's been some weird and very dangerous mutations as a result. That's why we've got all this ground and livestock. The less that passes in and out of these gates, the better. Just in case. Do you know how diseases work? Microorganisms?
Yep. Little creatures that can fit in a drop of water. They make you sick.
Mm-hmm. So every breath you take behind these walls is a risk. The closer you get to the main buildings, the more danger. So you should thank your lucky stars you were treated out here. After I operate, we're going to keep your friend here for 3 days of observation. Don't worry, you'll have a bed, but you'll work for it. Consider it paying off your debt for your partner's medical treatment. Once you're out of here, go back to Kentucky and tell your buddies. This isn't a drugstore, it's not a brothel, and it's not a place to come get cured of the clap with the ordnance picking up the tab. It's a scary lab full of death you can't even see coming. You understand, or should we start writing it on the sides of the legworms you sell us?
I understand. Thank you.
Xanadu, October. Summer lingered that year between the Great Lakes and the Appalachians. Ohio could not have been more idyllic, with cloudless days reaching into the mid-70s and cool nights in the high 50s, perfect weather for sleeping under a light blanket. There was plenty of time for apple picking and blueberry gathering, and the turkeys had grown extra large in that year of plenty. David Valentine always remembered that first fall of his exile as a grim, disturbing business under a kindly sky. Perhaps if he'd been lazier, or argumentative, or a thief, he and Anka would have been thrown out of Xanadu with the Golden One sutures still weeping. But after his first day in the fields, Valentine found the bio-warfare scare story implausible, and he became determined to find out what lay behind the neatly tuck-pointed facade of those reddish bricks. The job offer didn't come as much of a surprise. It happened over dinner in the field house, a small apartment building that reminded Valentine of Price's Motel, essentially a line of tiny rooms, two sharing one bath, that housed the lowest of the low of Xanadu's laborers, the Hands. McIver, the chief hand, sat with him as he ate his plate of stew at one of the long cafeteria tables in the rec center. McIver had a nose that looked like an overgrown wart, and ate slowly and stiffly and with a bit of a wince, like an old dog.
So you offer me a job, boss?
For you and your grog, assuming he's willing to work. When that new barn goes in, I'll need a supervisor. You could be it.
Well, I was thinking of joining up with the Kentucky Legion.
Get your head blown off? Chasing gorillas up and down the hills is all right for some, but you got character and intelligence. I'll see it plain. We could use you here.
Doc Booth warned me off about diseases.
Hands work outdoors. You're not cleaning up after the patients inside. I've been here 14 years, and I've never seen anything but colds and flu and a bit of pneumonia in the winter. Don't concern yourself with what's going on up at the Grands.
Sure seem eager to have me. That means there's a catch.
I'm no spring chicken, Tar. There's a catch. It hasn't caught me.
Do I have to sign a contract or anything?
Ohio's booming. Hard to find reliable men these days. Everyone wants city work under the lights. You Kentuck aren't so hot for jump joints and dazzle halls. Don't worry about the contracts. You can quit whenever you like. Forget about your tribesmen. No one in Kentucky's in a position to say boo to the ordinance. Stay the weekend, at least. Saturday's a half day, and we're having a dance in town at the NUC Hall. Church is bringing down some husband hunters from Cleveland and beers all the way from Milwaukee, if you're partial to that poison. Great way to end your week here, either way. What do you say?
I say fine.
Anka watched him get dressed for the dance. Leathers on the bottom, freshly washed blue chambray work shirt up top, and offered only one piece of advice.
Don't drink. Dr. Booth says McIver doesn't touch a drop of alcohol.
I'm more interested in getting friendly with the security staff. There's one odd thing about this place. Except for the people in charge of the various departments and that vet's nurse, seems like no one here has worked here longer than a year or two. Except friend McIver.
Perhaps you either get promoted or rotated out.
I get the feeling McIver's offer is a wiggling pink worm inside the mouth of a very big snapping turtle.
It gives us time to look down the turtle's throat, my David.
Valentine waited in front of the staff apartments, a little apart from the crowd of off-duty hands and service workers waiting for the buses into town. A last bottle of sealed bulletproof was tucked inside a plain paper bag he cradled. He watched those waiting to go to the dance. A few passed around a silver flask, more smoked. The women wore golden metallic eyeshadow and heavy black liner, apparently the current style in Ohio. A dozen of the security staff all waited together in a line against the wall, like the school kids too cool to be out on the playground. Three buses took them into the Riverside town. Valentine managed to take a seat next to one of the security men, but he either stared out the window or spoke to the two of his class in the seats just ahead during the half-hour trip. The church hall turned out to be a quasi-cathedral with attached school. The dance was set up beneath raised basketball backboards in what had been the gymnasium. A raised stage was built into one end of the gym. Red and blue streamers formed a canopy overhead and decorated the refreshment tables, provided by the Ohio Young Vanguard, actualization team number 415, according to a sign and a jar accepting donations. A teenage girl, eyes bright enough to be the result of Benzedrine, thanked him for his $5 donation and offered him a four-color pamphlet. The ordinance and NUC thanks its health security workers of Xanadu, read the banner over the raised platform at one end of the gymnasium. Dusty red curtains half closed off a stage, hiding the lighting gear for the musicians. At the other end, folding tables and chairs had a few balloons attached. A nostalgic hip-hop DJ-backed band, pronounced lame by one of the security staff, laid down a techno beat as they entered, and the chief bandsman started exhorting the crowd to enjoy themselves as soon as the workers trickled in. The music echoed oddly in the high-ceilinged, quarter-lit gym, making Valentine feel as though he'd just stepped inside a huge kettle drum. Valentine knew a handful of names and a few more faces, and once he'd nodded to those he knew, he sat down on the basketball stands and read the trifold pamphlet the young Vanguard girl had given him. 7 civic virtues we grow inside as our bodies grow outside. Pictures of particularly outstanding Vanguards and their ordinance sponsors filled the back. The churchmen knew how to keep their flocks all moving in the same direction, straight to the slaughterhouse. The male-female ratio equalized a little when a pair of local churchmen arrived with a contingent of single women. Their clothes and stockings marked them as city girls, looking like peacocks dumped in a headwater barnyard and smelling of desperation. Or perhaps that was just the name of the perfume. The churchmen divided the group in two parts and led their sub-flocks around, making introductions. Two security men near Valentine looked over the new arrivals.
Take a heck of a lot more than Applejack to get me to take a run at one of those boxes.
Try a blindfold.
Valentine sidled up to them.
I got an untapped bottle of Kentucky bourbon if you like.
Take a hike, cowpuncher.
My name is...
Get lost, Quirt. You're not making yourself look good. You're making us look bad.
We could talk more outside if you like.
I'll show your liquor, new man.
Valentine startled. 6 feet of creamy skin stood barefoot next to him, her heels dangling loose from one hand and a clutch purse in the other. She was at least a decade older, but high-cheeked and attractive in a shoulder-padded dress, or simply more skilled with makeup and clothing than the rest of the women in the gym. Valentine wondered if she'd come in by a different route. She'd neither arrived on the buses nor been escorted in by the churchmen.
Looking hot, Doc P.
The woman cocked her head, an eyebrow up. Even Valentine, 30 degrees out of the line of fire of the stair, felt a chill.
Come on, you butt.
The security man pulled his companion away.
What's your name?
Tar. Tar Ayub.
Tar? Like in nicotine and...
A short for Tarquin.
Fran Paoli. I work up at Xanadu, too.
I'm liking it better and better there.
Valentine showed her the bottle.
Hey, that's real Kentucky bourbon, I believe.
Care for a snort?
With water. About 5 cc's.
How much is that?
A shot glass.
When Valentine returned from the refreshment table with 2 ice-filled plastic cups of water, she stood next to a paper-covered table festooned with balloons reading, Happy Birthday. Valentine set his glasses down and held out the chair for her.
Why'd you take your heels off?
I can be sneaky that way. Besides, it makes me feel sexy.
It also makes you 2 inches shorter than I am.
Well, I didn't know we had any doctors in attendance.
I'll be it. Oriana and I came down to the waterfront to do some shopping.
And you just couldn't resist the music and the decor?
Valentine passed her drink to her.
No, I wanted to meet you.
You're very direct.
Whew. That takes me back. I did a term with a field hospital down your way.
Wanted to meet me.
When you get a few more years, perspective on life, let's say, you run short on patience for gamesmanship.
Valentine watched more uniforms flow in. Couples began dancing, doing curious quick back and forth movements, one part of the body always touching. Hand gave way to arm, that gave way to shoulder, that gave way to buttock, that turned into hand again. He felt like a scruffy backwoodsman at a cotillion.
Good God, Ellie's here.
Duvalier wore a plain woolen skirt and a yellow blouse that flirted with femininity, but went with her flame-colored hair. Lipstick and eye makeup were making one of their rare appearances on her face. A soldier, who looked like a wrestler's torso on a jockey's legs, was introducing her to one of the churchmen. Valentine wondered if he was looking at an infatuated boy or a dead man.
You want to dance?
You don't look like the slinky slide type.
Is that what that dance is called?
It was when they were doing it in New York 10 years ago. God knows what it's called out here.
Valentine tried a tiny amount of bourbon, just enough to wet his lips and make it appear that he drank.
So, how'd you know you wanted to meet me?
Moonshots?
Is that something else from New York?
No. Have you been in the Grands yet?
The four big buildings? No.
I have a corner in Grand East. Top floor, apartment and office. I've got a nice telescope. Myself and some of the nurses have been known to take a coffee break and check out the hands. We call a particularly attractive male a moonshot. It's hard to get a unanimous vote from that crew, but you got 5 out of 5. The hair did it for Oriana. She's the tough grader.
There's not a bet having to do with me, is there?
Admit it, you're flattered.
I am, a little.
He picked up his drink.
Don't go anywhere.
Valentine headed for a corridor marked bathrooms and turned down a cinder block corridor. He found the men's. An assortment of student and adult-sized urinals stood ready. He went to the nearest one and spat out his bourbon, thinking of an old wolf named Bill Miranda who would have cried out at the waste. Alessa Duvalier tripped him as he exited. He stumbled.
You're a rotten excuse for the cast. Have you found her?
No, just as tight on the inside.
So how do you like pillow recon? Is she tight? Or is the bourbon loosening her up?
Oh, haven't had a chance to find out yet.
According to my date, she's big time. You be careful. I moved to the NUC Women's Hostel, by the way. My would-be boyfriend was horrified by my accommodations. Bed checks.
I've got a chance at an upgrade too, methinks.
Duvalier pressed a piece of paper into Valentine's hand.
Phones work around here, but you get listened to. If you need to run, leave a message at the hostel that your migraines are back. I'll get to the motel as soon as I can and wait. Do they allow inbound calls up there?
I think there's a phone in our rec center. I'll call with the number.
Good luck.
Duvalier made a kissing motion in the air, not wanting to leave telltale lipstick. She dived into the women's washroom. And Valentine went to the bar for more ice. He chatted with Fran Paoli for 30 minutes or so. Learned that she'd been born in Pennsylvania and educated in New York. She found the ordinance dull enough to make me look forward to Noonside Passions, evidently a television show, and wouldn't discuss her work, except to say that it required specialized expertise, but was as routine as the NUC social. But it promised her a brass ring and a Manhattan penthouse when she completed her 16th year at Xanadu. She couldn't or wouldn't even say what her area of medical expertise was. Paoli waved, and another woman approached, with the purse-clutching, tight-elbowed attitude of a missionary in an opium den.
Oriana Kremel, this is Tar, our moonshot babe. Tar, baby. I like that.
The market was a joke. Fresh stock in from Manhattan, my eye. Are you done presenting in here?
Oriana's a great doctor, but a greater prig. Would you like a ride back, Tar, baby?
Thank you.
Then let's quit the church. Crepe paper gives me a rash.
They took Valentine outside to the parking lot. A well-tended black SUV sat there. It was a big Lincoln, powered by something called GeoDrive.
Would you like to drive my beast, Ty?
Would you forgive me if I wrecked it? I'm not much with wheels.
Valentine climbed into the rear seat. The upholstery had either been replaced or lovingly refurbished. A deep well in the back held a few crates of groceries. Valentine smelled garlic and lemons in the bags. The women in front put on headsets. Fran Paoli turned on the lights, and the parking lot sprang into black-shadowed relief. She turned the car around and drove down a side street until she reached the river highway. Two police pickup wagons motored west. Valentine wondered how many unfortunates they carried to the Reapers. Two each? Three? Nine? Valentine stared out the window as the red taillights receded into demon eyes staring at him from the darkened road. They blinked away.
You and your hobbies.
Fran Paoli turned up the music, but Valentine could still hear if he concentrated.
So I like to go to bed with more than a good book.
Someday it's going to bite you.
Kinky. But don't fret, I can handle this hillbilly.
He's after status, and that's it. Don't fool yourself.
Valentine looked for Reapers in the woods as the truck approached Xanadu, but couldn't see or sense them. The security guard hardly used his flashlight when the SUV reached the gate. Fran Paoli waggled her fingers at him, and he waved twice at the gate, and the fencing parted in opposite directions. She drove up a concrete shrub-lined roadway and pulled into a gap under the south tower.
216, entering.
She worked a button on the dashboard, and a door on tracks rolled up into the ceiling. The SUV made it inside the garage, just, and parked in the almost empty lot. A few motorbikes, a pickup, some golf carts, and a low, sleek sports car were scattered haphazardly among the concrete supporting pillars like cows sleeping in a wood. A trailer with an electric gasoline pump attached was set up on blocks near the door.
You'll like the Grand Towers. You mind helping with the groceries?
Valentine took two crates, Oriana one. They walked past a colorful mural, silhouettes of children throwing a ball to each other while a dog jumped, and Fran Paoli passed her security ID card over a dark glass panel. An elevator opened. It smelled like pine-scented cleanser inside.
Home.
You don't have to hit a button?
I could. It's voice print technology. A couple of the techs on the security staff like to tinker with old gizmos.
I wish they could get an MRI working.
Valentine looked in his boxes on the ride up. Foil-wrapped crackers, a tin of something called pâté, a bottle of olive oil with a label in writing Valentine thought looked like Cyrillic, artichokes, fragrant peaches, sardines, a great brick of chocolate with foil lettering. The elevator let them out on a parquet-floored hallway. If there was a floor higher than 12, the elevator buttons didn't indicate it. Lighting sconces added soft smears of light to the maroon walls. Fran Paoli held Oriana's groceries while she let herself in.
Good night. Call if you want your rounds covered.
Think so.
Thanks, Tar. Good night.
Oriana took her box of foodstuffs, slightly more mundane instant mixes and frozen packages with frost-covered labels. Her door had a laminated plate and a slide next to it, Oriana Krimmel, M.D.
I'm at the end of the hall, Tar Baby.
Fran led him down, putting an extra swivel in her walk. She twirled her keys on their wrist loop. The door at the end read, Executive Medical Director. She opened it, and Valentine passed through a small reception office. A computer screen cast a soft glow against a leather office chair, and a larger meeting room with an elegantly shaped glass conference table. Floor-to-ceiling windows reflected only the darkness outside and their faces. Lights came on as she moved through the space to a frosted glass partition. Valentine marked a telescope at the glass corner she passed, a casual living space, and then a kitchen. Valentine set the boxes down on a small round table and extracted the fresh fruits and vegetables.
Stay for a drink?
Fran Paoli lay beside Valentine in post-coital slumber. Her makeup was on the sheet, him, and the oh-so-soft pillowcases, and she gave off a faint scent of sweet feminine perspiration and rose-scented baby powder. She made love like some women prepared themselves for bed, following a long-practiced countdown that evidently gave her a good deal of pleasure. Valentine thought of Arcee, the professional he'd met at the Quisling party in Little Rock. Was this how it was for her? Did she feel like her body was an apparatus as her customers took what they wanted? Valentine engaged in the lovemaking with, perhaps clinical detachment was the right word. It had been fun. Fran Paoli's hunger for him, the way she clawed and gasped and bucked out her satisfaction with his erection, and then brought him back again after he spent himself into the black market condom, a thin-walled novelty that made Southern Command's prophylactics feel like rain ponchos. But he'd learned little from the pillow recon. She still wouldn't talk about what she did. She woke him up briefly when she got up, though she tried not to. Valentine dozed, feeling the sun change the quality of the light in the apartment, and remembered that he'd seen some kind of pulley-topped treadmill. Then she woke him for sex. Sweaty, clean-faced, with her hair tied in a ponytail and her muscles hot, she rode him like a final exercise machine.
Tar, you are a treat for sore thighs.
She collapsed backward, still straddling him. He felt her hair on his ankle. He couldn't see her face, and had the strange feeling he was speaking to her vulva. She pulled herself up.
I need a shower. There's another bathroom right next to the outer office if you need to use it. You can help yourself to anything you like in the kitchen. No homesies for your Aunt Betty, though. Poppy seed crackers and Danish Havardia are too hard to come by.
Well, I should check in at the barn. Livestock don't take days off.
If I'm still in the shower when you're dressed, feel free to just leave. When I got up, I phoned down to the security desk and let them know you were my guest last night. Just take the yellow card on the counter for the elevator.
Valentine investigated the kitchen and found bananas and orange juice. The orange juices Southern Command issued had a grainy taste, but this had real pulp in it. Valentine ate two bananas and explored the apartment. There was an office off the conference room, but it was locked. He could jimmy or pick it easily enough with something from the kitchen, but after she walked naked from the bathroom to go to her bedroom dresser for clean underwear, he decided against it. He looked out the windows. The conference center looked out on the grounds, barns, and wire in the distance. The living room was set so you could look at the other three grand buildings. All had the tall windows at the top, and he saw a few desks and living room furniture in the others. The rows of windows below were darkened, and many were shaded. They told him nothing, except that if there were one room per window, that made a lot of rooms, over 300 per building. 1,200 rooms. Between the four grand buildings was some kind of common space, nicely laid out with lots of bistro tables around the edges near trees and planters, and a long pool at the center under greenhouse-like glass. People were swimming what looked like laps, but in a leisurely fashion. He couldn't tell much about them, thanks to condensation. Others were sitting at the bistro tables, enjoying what remained of the soft fall air, but from so high up he could tell little by the tops of their heads. All were wearing either blue or pink scrubs. Pink and blue. Pink and blue. He set his glass of orange juice down on an end table. Valentine strode into the conference room and looked at the telescope. He could stagger with it, just. He looked at the smaller finder scope. It could be detached from the larger. He twisted a screw, freed it, and went back to the living room. He looked from pink to pink down in the plaza. The patients were all women. He'd expected that. They were thin, some sickly-looking, most with tired, limp hair. He'd expected that, too, as he'd seen it often enough in the Kurian zone. Almost all were pregnant, some bulging, some with just a swelling. He hadn't expected that. The shower turned off. Valentine picked up his orange juice and crossed back to the conference center to return the spotting scope to its rest, lined up with the telescope. He hoped he hadn't screwed up the alignment too badly. He pointed the large scope at the barn, adjusted the counterweight, and made it clear that he'd been screwing with the optics. When Fran Paoli came out of the bathroom, her hair in a towel, he was washing his glass in the sink.
Just leaving.
She gave him a kiss on the neck.
I don't suppose you'd like to come to my place next time.
Ooh, you're cocky.
She unwrapped the towel and began working her scalp with the dry side.
No next time?
Of course there will be, Tar Baby. You're so tight. I don't feel like I've begun to unwrap you yet.
Well, I'm in room...
While there's a certain thrill in those old stained mattresses down there, I'm a bit worried about fleas. How about we meet halfway? I might work in a picnic tomorrow. I've got a spare afternoon. You can tell me where you got those hot-ass pants. I would love to have a skirt of that leather. Is it kid?
More like bug.
Is McIver still running things out in the fields?
Yes.
I'll get you the afternoon off tomorrow, if I can make it.
Great.
Until that old knob, we need a golf course, not more cows. I'm really sick of the one-hole wonder on the North 40.
I'm the bottom man in the totem pole in the barns, Fran Tick.
Fran Tick. Ta NASCAR, baby. I love it. You'd better go or you'll really see frantic. I'm due on my rounds.
Valentine slapped her thin-robed bottom as he headed for the door.
Hey, Tar.
She stopped him and passed him a yellow piece of plastic.
Here. Elevator won't work without this. Just slide it into the slot above the buttons. There's a diagram.
Thanks.
He went to the elevator, feeling like a male Black Widow spider who's crossed the female's web and inexplicably lived. He swiped the card in the reader according to directions. As an experiment, he hit the button for the sixth floor, but the elevator took him to the ground floor. Valentine exited at a high-ceilinged lobby. A rounded, raised platform held a few of the security staff. Two women in blue scrubs, one holding a plastic water bottle, the other a styrofoam coffee cup, stood near a bank of wide-doored elevators that evidently didn't go all the way to the top floor. Valentine walked toward the doors leading to the patio and pool area.
Hey, hand!
I'm sorry?
Your yellow building card. Turn it in.
Valentine fished it out of his pocket, reached up, and placed it on the desk.
Here you go.
He went back toward the doors, pretending not to see the other exits.
Am I getting smarter or are they getting dumber? Hand!
But Valentine was already passing out the doors. He headed across the slate bricks. The intertower area smelled like flowers and cedar chips, which were spread liberally around the landscaping. Two women in pink, both copiously pregnant, nibbled at some kind of breakfast mix with beat-up spoons in ceramic bowls. Valentine's nose detected yogurt. Both were rather pallid and looked as though they needed the morning sun. Another group of four, no visible swelling inside the loose pink outfits, kept company by one in blue, worked on each other's hair and a pitcher of tomato juice. Valentine headed down a short ramp to the swimming pool deck. Chlorine burned his nostrils. Two dozen heads bobbed in the wide lap lanes. Others were lined up at one end of the pool, waiting their turn. No two swimming suits were alike. There were hot pink bikinis and big black one-pieces. Maybe the pool was the one place the women got to express themselves with clothing. A man in shorts with a coach's whistle supervised from a short diving board.
Come on, ladies, keep swimming. Gets the blood flowing. Gets those bowels moving. I want to see healthy pink cheeks. Yo, can I help you?
The last came when he spied Valentine. But the words barely registered. Gail Foster, formerly Gail Post, waited at one side of the pool with the next group. Her hair and cheeks were thinner, but the big green eyes and delicate upturned nose were unmistakable. With her hair wet and flat, idly kicking the water as she talked to the woman next to her, she appeared childlike, so unlike the ID photo from Post Flyer, where she stared into the camera as though challenging the lens to capture her. She didn't even look up as the man with the whistle hopped off the board to approach Valentine.
Just taking a shortcut.
Don't disturb the expectant. You turn right around and...
Right. I'm going.
Valentine retreated back up the ramp. He walked around the greenhouse to the east side of the patio, looking for a hose, a rake, anything. But there were no groundskeepers or tools in sight. He removed his work boot and went to work on the leather tongue with his pocket knife, tearing it. If questioned, he could say that he was trying to get rid of an irritating flange. He managed to idle away a half hour. A new group of women marched out of the South Tower in single file, white robes held tight even in the warm morning air. Valentine looked at the knobby knees and thin legs and wondered what kind of diet the women were on. They looked like gulag chars who hadn't been on full rations of beans for weeks. Once they passed in, another group walked two by two back into the tower, led by one of the medical staff in blue scrubs. Valentine went to work relacing his boots so the laces presented fresh material to the eyelets. Like clockwork, another group came out, this time from the West Tower, and Gail Foster exited. It was hard to tell under the robes, but all seemed to have about the same level of swelling in the midsection. Same routine, led like chicks behind a blue mother hen.
Damn, West Tower.
Valentine put his boots back on and hurried back to the road leading to the pastures. The vet, Dr. Booth, sped up on her little four-wheeler cart.
Want a lift?
My weekend to be offered rides by women.
Valentine hopped into the seat next to her.
What did I tell you about falling for the bullshit here?
I like being indoors every night. I've seen too many bodies in the woods.
Impolite to bring up such matters.
It's all the same bullshit, Doc. Depends on how much you want to shovel it off.
Give me a break. You're part of it now. You were, even in Kentucky.
There's being a part and taking part. Your assistant, for example. How'd she get past the genetics defects laws?
PEPSA? She wasn't born that way. She's from a tough neighborhood in Pittsburgh. She complained once too often, and that's what happens to complainers there. They ripped out her tongue. She still complains. She does it on that little pad of hers.
So, what's with all the pregnant women?
They're highly susceptible. You know how the ordinance is about birth rate.
I don't, actually.
They're here so the babies can be saved.
Don't want anyone going before it's decided. Nice and orderly.
Don't talk to MacGyver that way, Ayub. I wish you weren't talking to me.
The guard dogs in their kennels welcomed them.
I imagine you're supposed to turn me in?
If it comes to protecting my position, don't think I won't. You and the Grog are nothing to me. Nothing.
Except someone you can be honest around.
You want honest? I don't like people. That's why I'm a vet. Now get out. I've got some cows to inseminate.
Valentine got out and went over to greet the dogs. He nodded to Pepsa, busy cleaning out the kennels. Dr. Booth stared at him for a moment, then drove away.